A view descends from a white ceiling toward a room filled with officers and people in suits, staring ahead. They look to a man with curly black hair, Adrian Monk, who stands in the middle of a ransacked living room. Peacock Original, in association with Universal Content Productions. A title, Mr. Monk's Last Case. He turns to a set of shelves and cupboards labeled with crime scene numbers. He looks toward a blonde woman, Sharona, then finally looks down at a woman's body lying under a dining table in a pool of blood.
The stove.
Over here. It's in the kitchen.
No, I mean my stove. I think I left it on.
It's okay. I checked it as we were leaving.
Are you sure? Did you turn the knob?
Yeah.
The little knob, though.
I turned all the knobs. The stove was the one for Adrian.
Of course, Sharona meant well. She had no way of knowing. My stove had already been recalled twice. Once in 1986 for a faulty pilot light. And again in 1998 for a loose bracket on the oven door. For nearly a decade, that particular model, the Kitchen King 480 with the digital timer and self-cleaning oven, was the best-selling appliance in North America. I bought mine on March 1st, 1985, from Carl's Appliances on Rockaway Boulevard. I had it for 22 years. It was one of the longest relationships of my life, and certainly one of the happiest.
It was one of the longest relationships of my life, and certainly one of the happiest. The repairman confirmed my suspicion. The manifold valve in the right front burner had rusted through. I guess everyone remembers where they were when Kitchen King discontinued their deluxe six-burner flat top. I'm sorry, I cannot publish this.
Too long?
Does it come with a forklift?
Thank you, Terry. No, it's not just about the length, Adrian. We hired you to write about your career as a police detective. You solved 140 homicides. That's the story we paid for. Not this. Oh, here in chapter 4, you have two paragraphs about the suspect and 7, 8, 9 pages about his vacuum cleaner.
We have the same vacuum cleaner, the exact same model. What are the odds of that?
1 in 6?
Terrence.
Maybe I need an editor.
You've had 5 editors and 2 ghostwriters. They all quit. The last one changed his name and moved to Guam. I've talked to the lawyers. You're legally in breach. We need our advance back.
Advance me? You mean the money?
It's not my decision. I'm sorry, Adrian.
No. No, Beth, you can't do that. Here's the thing. Molly's getting married in 6 weeks.
Molly?
Trudy's daughter. I didn't even know about her until 12 years ago. It's all in the book. I mean, it will be in volume 2.
Is there something wrong with the chair?
It's not plumb with Terry's. It should be plumb. Maybe you could lower yours.
Why?
To make it plumb. You'll thank me later.
Oh, no, please don't.
You gotta pull up on the lever.
I could.
Maybe I'll just stand. Maybe we should all stand.
Monk shrugs. The publisher and her assistant stare at him.
Here's the thing. Molly is all I have. She's all I have left. She practically saved my life. When COVID hit, I was in pretty bad shape. Molly moved in with me. She never left my side for 1.5 years. She's only ever asked me for one thing, to pay for her wedding. I'll do whatever you want. I'll rewrite the book.
Oh, sorry, Adrian. It's just too late. It's been 10 years. The name Adrian Monk used to mean something. It's a different world now. Everyone's moved on.
I have an idea. May I make a suggestion? You both leave the room. And someone different comes in and says different things to me.
That's not going to happen.
How about this? You leave the room and nobody comes back in. Ever.
I think we're done here. Our lawyers will be in touch.
Monk circles around his chair, then walks out of the publisher's office with his hands over his face. He walks past workers in suits as he wipes his eyes. In a hallway, Monk presses the down button outside of an elevator and waits. His gaze locks onto something down the hall, and he steps away from the elevator. He makes his way toward a window that overlooks tall buildings. Crossing his arms, he gazes down at the traffic far below. Monk tightens his lips, then moves his finger toward the window lock and hesitates. He glances out the window, then unlocks it and slides it open.
Adrian?
He freezes. Turning, he faces the spirit of his wife, Trudy.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Let's back away. Take a step away from the window.
Trudy guides him away from the window.
Here we go. Adrian, you have to stop thinking about that.
But now they're taking the money back.
Yes. I know. I was there.
It was for her wedding. I promised Molly. I'm just so...
He takes her hands, and the elevator doors open. A man in the elevator sees Monk standing alone with his hands out.
Going down?
Monk stares ahead with a sorrowful expression, then rubs his hands together and joins the man in the elevator.
The wedding is off.
Excuse me?
He turns to Monk with a confused look as the doors close. A trolley travels through the city, and a plane soars over the San Francisco airport. Starring Tony Shalhoub, Traylor Howard, Jason Gray Stanford, Melora Hardin, with Hector Elizondo and Ted Levine as Stottlemyre. People wait for their loved ones, holding up welcome home signs. Monk holds up a sign that reads, "The wedding is off." A brunette, Molly, pushes her way toward Monk.
Sorry. Okay, I checked the board, and they just landed. Where did you get this?
I've ruined everything.
Adrian, for the 100th time, it's fine. You did us a favor. I always wanted a small wedding.
Oh, Molly, you don't have to say that.
It's true. The backyard is going to be perfect. And Griffin is frankly relieved because now he doesn't have to invite his cousins from hell. Okay.
Two women bump elbows as they greet each other, and a woman sprays hand sanitizer.
Better safe.
Thank you very much.
Wow. Look at that.
Someone shares a sanitizing wipe.
Everybody's you.
They're gonna hate it.
A woman with short hair, Natalie, approaches.
Oh, I think I see her. Hey!
Molly!
Hey! It's so good to see you!
Okay, let's see it. Okay.
A tattooed ring.
A tattoo.
Yeah.
Okay, I love it.
I know. Griffin has one, too.
Oh, at least we won't lose it, right?
Right?
Oh. There he is. Hello, boss. I've missed you.
Natalie?
You can't still be mad at me.
What was I supposed to do? Stephen transferred. I had to leave. We've talked about this.
People commute?
From Atlanta?
I thought you'd be happy for me.
Please be happy for me. I have a wonderful life.
Really?
Julie lives 10 minutes away. I sold 27 houses last year. I'm my own boss.
Adrian. This woman was your assistant for 12 years, which is a record that will never, ever be broken. So, say I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad you're here.
Say I've missed you.
I have missed you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Monk. I've missed you, too.
Oh, where's Leland?
Oh, he just texted. He couldn't get off work.
I thought he retired.
He did for about 20 minutes, and then he took another gig. But nobody knows what he's doing. It's top secret.
Oh,
Randy!
Hey, stranger!
Ah. Hey.
Wow, you look great.
It's so good to see you.
Oh. Hey, you ready for this?
I guess.
Pace your own sensor, love. She had to stay and help with the baby.
I heard. Benji's a dad. Congrats, Grandpa.
Step, Grandpa.
Okay. Let's see some pictures. Yes. Come on. Let's see it.
Oh, that's not all. Guess who was just reelected sheriff of Summit, New Jersey for the third time?
That's no big deal. Hey, Monk, how you doing?
Are you here to apologize?
No, I'm here for the wedding.
Oh.
He thinks we abandoned him.
It was more of a betrayal, actually.
But you told me to take the job.
You recommended me.
Maybe I wasn't thinking straight. Maybe I was distracted by the knife in my back.
Okay. I need your help. Will you go get my bag? It's right over here. It's black and green.
How's he doing?
It's hard to say. You know, after he solved Trudy's murder, he was doing better. I mean, you guys were there. He was
functioning.
He was functioning, more or less. But then the pandemic hit, and it was just, boom, back to square one. I mean, he didn't leave the house for 2 years. And then he started taking those in-home rapid tests, and it was like an addiction. He was testing himself every 20 minutes. I'm pretty sure that cocaine would have been a cheaper habit. Then, about 3 weeks ago, they canceled his book deal.
No.
Yeah, and now I'm more worried than ever.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just like he's given up. I mean, he hardly talks anymore. He just sits around all day and stares out the window.
What are you doing?
You'll thank me later.
He sorts her luggage.
I don't even know you.
You'll thank me for that, too.
Last night, he called me at 3 a.m. to say I love you.
Oh.
It's freaking me out. I mean, if it wasn't for Griffin, I would be a total wreck.
Oh, I cannot wait to meet him. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I loved his book about the global wealth gap thing.
You didn't read his book.
Well, I listened to a podcast.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, well, Sharona listens to it. She fills me in. I get the gist.
You don't get the gist?
I get the gist of the gist.
Okay, well, guess who he's interviewing today, right now?
Who?
A screen.
I'm Rick Eden.
Rick Eden?
Whoa. Rick Eden, yep.
You know my story.
Richest man on Earth.
I joined the Royal Air Force when I was 19. In between missions, I took a computer programming course and designed my first online shopping website. Our success has allowed me to fulfill my lifelong dream to become the first civilian in history to orbit the Earth. Live your dream. Make it happen. I'll see you on the launch pad.
Meanwhile...
5,200, 5,400. Looking good, she's rock solid.
Workers monitor a rocket from a mission control room. Among the rows of computers, a young man jots down notes. A glamorous woman who wears the jacket of her three-piece suit over her shoulders approaches the man. She side-eyes him, then looks to Rick Eden, who studies the rocket on screen. The woman leans toward the young man.
He used to look at me like that.
This is Eden. I'm Griffin Briggs.
I know who you are. I listen every week.
Does he know that?
Shh. We have a secret.
6,700? That's full throttle.
She's holding. We're stable.
This isn't a full load, so let's push it to 9,000.
Rick, we prepped for 7. The chamber's not gonna hold.
Gonna hold a 9 on the day. I'd rather find out now.
We've never gone to red on a shuttle test.
The shuttle's gone, Brian. It's a history lesson. I designed that primary chamber myself. She'll hold at 9, so let's do it. Let's push her. Push her. Come on.
Lines of code and images of the rocket's thrusters appear on the screen.
Why is he doing this?
For the benefit of all mankind.
Why is he really doing it?
My husband invented a shopping website that prints money. And he's basically 10 years old.
8,200. 86. 87.
Workers watch anxiously as a meter turns from green to yellow to red.
Deviation 0.5. Deviation 0.95. 89.5.
Flames shoot out of the thrusters, and a meter's numbers rise quickly.
9,000.
Still holding? Still stable.
Workers share looks of relief, and Rick studies the screen.
Okay, shut it down.
Rick kisses his wife, who is noticeably younger than him.
This is Griffin Riggs.
Hi.
Hey.
Proceed with caution.
Just take this outside.
Griffin follows Rick out. At the launch site, they gaze up at the rocket.
Basically, I'm going to be strapped to a big bomb. 7 million pounds of liquid fuel and oxygen. I'll be 200 miles above the Earth. My wife says it's as close to heaven as I'm ever likely to get. Would you go? If you could?
I'd be tempted.
Ah, come on, I know you'd go. I've done my research on you, Griffin Briggs. You and I are kindred spirits. Hmm. Extreme sports, skydiving, cliff jumping. Is it true that you once paraglided into an active volcano?
Well, it wasn't active that morning. I was hoping to talk about your late partner, Arlen Truslith.
Hey, can you put that away? That's not an interview you want to do.
Well, people have questions. There are some things that aren't quite adding up.
No, people don't. You do. Only you. There was an investigation, Griffin. It was an accident. We were in Barbados. He was scuba diving. He drowned. I told him not to dive alone.
Was he alone? I had this photo enlarged. And this is him on the boat. That looks like another diver.
Rick studies the photo.
Where were you when it happened?
It's public record.
In a black and white flashback, a man rips off another diver's oxygen mask. He flails his limbs frantically, then his stiff body rises to the surface.
I was back in my room at the hotel with a world-class hangover.
I've been hearing stories about the charter boat captain and some other local officials receiving money.
Oh, you should be careful, sport. Well, it was this time, you might be flying into a very active volcano.
Is that why you asked me here? To threaten me?
You must be aware that I own the San Francisco Dispatcher. Managing editor there was fired this morning. If you'd like it, the job is yours.
You're offering me a job?
Yeah, your dream job. $600,000 a year, bonuses, stock options. You could consider it a wedding gift. Unless, of course, you'd rather have a cuisine on.
If you're serious.
Yeah, I am.
I'll take the Cuisinart.
Congratulations, Mr. Briggs. Most people don't know when they've made the biggest mistake of their lives. But you will. You'll always know. You'll go to your grave knowing. A gentleman will see you after me.
Rick marches off.
You can keep the photo. I have plenty.
Rick stops and crumples the photo in his hand, then puts on a pair of sunglasses. In his apartment, Monk plays clarinet.
Mr. Monk? Your prescription, Mr. Monk.
Oh, thank you.
That's your last refill. Do you want us to call Dr. Bell?
No. That's fine. Should do it. Sorry. I only have a 20.
It's all right. Just get me next time.
Here's the thing. There might not be a next time. I'll be going away for a while.
Monk holds out a $20 bill, then pulls it back.
I mean, you don't have change, do you?
No, I don't.
No.
Monk hands him the bill, then takes it away. Monk turns around, rubbing his neck with the bill in hand.
Oh, boy, huh? $20?
Yeah, that's a lot. You know...
No. You... I mean... You know what...
Monk slowly raises the bill as the delivery boy reaches for it. Then he pulls it closer. Monk holds out the bill again.
Go ahead. You should take it. Thanks a lot.
The teen grabs the cash. Then Monk pulls it away again.
You're welcome.
Just go. Why don't you just go?
Yeah, I will.
The teen hurries away with a 20. Monk walks into his bathroom and opens a mirrored cupboard filled with a neat stack of full pill bottles. He places the new bottle on the second row like a pyramid, then shuts the cupboard. He heads into another room, where he opens a desk drawer and retrieves a small calendar. He meticulously draws an X on the 19th day of June. The name Trudy is written on the 22nd.
few more days.
He slides the calendar off the desk and sets it back in the drawer. Later, in an office, Monk meets with a bald man, Dr. Bell.
I heard you on the radio talking about your book.
Thank you for listening.
I'm patient A, aren't I?
Adrian, that information is confidential, so...
That's a yes. How did you describe him? A cluster of traumatic symptoms unprecedented in the annals of psychiatric history.
Well, now you see that. That could be anybody, really.
And I'm patient B, aren't I?
Adrian, the cases I described are actually composites of different people.
That's a yes. And I'm patient C. That was pretty obvious. At least I'm not patient D. He is one sick puppy. Right?
Dr. Bell fidgets, then finally makes eye contact with Monk.
Oh, my God. I'm A through D. I'm a whole bookshelf.
Let's move on, Oren. We have something important to discuss. Your pharmacy called. You've been refilling your prescription. Lorazepam is a powerful sedative. It's to be taken as needed.
That's what I've been doing. As needed.
You haven't been hoarding them, have you?
No.
Adrian, I know it's been a challenging year. You lost your book contract. You feel you've disappointed Molly, and you haven't been working. Although you could work if you wanted to. They still call you, don't they?
Occasionally.
Adrian, everyone has problems. And fears and disappointments, and they're all coping. How are they different from you?
Well, for one thing, they're coping.
Clouds roll over a full moon at night. A dark figure hurries through a backyard and stops in front of a garage window, then pushes it open. Night shifts to day, and people decorate the backyard with white chairs in front of an arch. Molly talks on the phone.
No, Natalie, I'm sure he's fine, honestly. I think he's probably just walking through the park.
Everything looks so beautiful.
Yeah, he's been doing that a lot lately. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, bye.
In the garage...
The trellis looks beautiful. You were right. I was wrong.
Aw, you don't have to say that. But I sure as hell love hearing it.
So I just talked to Natalie, and apparently Adrian hasn't been home all morning.
You guys worry about Monk when he doesn't leave the house. And you also worry about him when he does.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. You gonna worry about me like that?
Starting tomorrow at 2 p.m., that'll be my job, worrying about you.
Looking forward to it.
So you're gonna do this? You're gonna bungee jump the day before our wedding?
Well, I have not missed a jump in 6 years.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to disappoint the other psychotics. How late were you up last night?
Don't ask. I told Franken he'd have a rough edit by Monday.
Griffin.
I know.
We promised each other a real honeymoon.
Baby, I know. It's just every minute counts, okay? Eden's gonna do everything he can to kill this story. You weren't there. Guys like Rick Eden, they're capable of anything. Rules don't apply.
You just measured that.
You know what they say? You measure twice, cut once.
Who says that?
Everybody says that?
I've never heard it.
And nonetheless, everyone says it.
Oh, nonetheless?
And what are you doing now?
I'm just doing my job.
You're doing it because you don't trust me.
Checker. This is I'm a
fact-checker.
He tickles her. A crowd cheers as a woman bungee jumps off of a rusted bridge over a winding stream. Molly stands on the bridge, looking around. Griffin strolls across with his bungee cord over his shoulder. In a montage, Rick walks through a warehouse, and Griffin continues along the bridge. Griffin finds Molly on her phone.
Hey.
Hey.
There you are. Any word from Adrian?
No.
Okay, he'll turn up. He always does.
Yeah, I know.
Griffin! You're up.
They pinky promise.
I love you.
I love you.
They share a kiss over their matching ring tattoos.
You gonna stay here?
Uh-huh.
You can't see from here.
Exactly.
Molly nervously scratches her neck as Griffin walks through the crowd. At the warehouse, Rick checks his watch, then looks to the side and winks with a smirk. At the bridge, Griffin clips himself onto the cord and fastens harnesses around his legs and ankles. He climbs a set of stairs, then lets out a breath as he looks over the edge of the bridge. Griffin springs off the platform with his arms out and flies toward the stream below. He accelerates at a rapid speed, approaching the ground. He braces himself.
What was that? What was that? Griffin? What happened? What happened?
Don't.
What happened? Oh my God.
Molly hunches over, sobbing.
Oh my God.
Happened.
The cord was 6 feet too long. You must have measured wrong.
Molly eyes the man, who has a graying beard and a pageboy cap. Breathing heavily, she clasps her head, refusing to look over the edge of the bridge. Monk sits at a picnic table in a park. Trudy appears beside him.
You've been coming here a lot.
It's sacred ground, this park, the bridge. It's where I proposed to you.
You know I wasn't surprised at all. You showed up at my door wearing one knee pad. It's what they call a clue.
I'll be with you soon. I can't wait.
Don't say that. Darling, you're scaring me.
Yeah. I got him. He's in the park. You were right. Monk! Thank God.
Monk stands to face Disher.
What happened?
On the bridge, Natalie comforts Molly. Molly looks up and sees Monk sprinting toward her with Disher close behind. Ducking beneath the crime scene tape, Monk rushes to embrace Molly.
I know.
As Monk and Molly hold each other on the rusted bridge, the view rises into the sky. 1 week later, Monk and Natalie stand in the courthouse lobby.
How long do these things take?
Not long. It's a coroner's inquest. It's just a formality.
A sanitizer dispenser.
Excuse me, sorry. This is mine.
What do you mean it's yours?
He brought it from home.
A label with Monk's name.
Can I use it?
I'm sorry, I don't make the rules.
But you do make the rules.
Then no.
The woman eyes him and walks away. Monk glances at Natalie with a shrug.
What?
Disher and Molly enter with a document.
Hey, just ended. Death by misadventure. It was unanimous.
Molly rips up the document.
Well, maybe not unanimous.
That was no accident. He was murdered. Well, it can't be a coincidence. The richest, most powerful man in the world threatens Griffin, and then 2 days later, he's dead?
Molly, I know you want to blame somebody. It's perfectly natural.
No. Okay, Griffin knew it. He knew it that morning in the garage. He said that Rick Eden was capable of anything, that rules don't apply. You have to help me.
Help you what?
Help me prove it. When Trudy died, you never stopped looking.
Molly... Your mother was killed by a car bomb. It was obviously a criminal act. Griffin voluntarily jumped off a bridge.
It's not possible. He was so careful. He was obsessive about it.
Okay. Zero evidence of foul play.
Yeah. He did it. I don't know how he did it, but he did it.
Molly heads out.
Mr. Monk, she needs to be sure.
Why don't we look into it? I mean, it couldn't hurt.
I mean, yeah, I can stay an extra couple of days.
I'm sorry. It's not a good time for me. I have plans.
You have plans? What kind of plans?
Personal plans.
What kind of personal plans?
Personal plans. I've already delayed it a week.
Whatever they are, they can wait a few days. I mean, it's not life or death, is it? I didn't think so.
They leave. A man in a suit goes to use Monk's hand sanitizer dispenser.
Oh, hey. Yeah, nice try.
Monk shoots the man a stern look, then drags the dispenser with him on the way out. Later, on the deserted bridge.
How high are we? Is that 40 feet?
300 feet.
So, 40 feet?
It's 300 feet.
So, 40 feet.
Yes, Mr. Unger, it's 40 feet.
Really? It looks higher.
So, Griffin knew the exact height. Within an eighth of an inch, he jumped off this bridge twice a year.
They jump from here?
Yeah, that's right. It's called a runway.
Griffin secured his own rope.
Yes. I mean, I assume he did.
You didn't see him?
No, I never watched him. I was over there.
Show me.
Yeah, sure.
They follow Molly.
Right about here.
So you were here and there was a crowd?
About 30 people. I couldn't see anything, but I could hear them. First cheering, then...
Then what?
And then I ran back up here.
By the runway.
And I heard someone say, "What happened?" And then a guy said the cord was 6 feet too long.
He said it was 6 feet too long? Are you sure?
I'll never forget it.
Those were his exact words.
Yeah, he was right. It's in the report, 6 feet too long.
How did he know? He didn't say about 6 feet. Or he didn't say 5 feet or 10 feet. How did he know exactly how long it was?
Who was he?
I have no idea.
What did he look like?
Average, I guess. Like 40s. He was wearing a hat. Oh, white nail polish. But only on these two fingers.
Two fingers?
Yeah. Huh.
Oh, maybe, No, I got nothing. Oh, wait. No, nothing.
Remember when you and Steven took me to Giant Stadium?
12 years ago.
13. I remember the catcher behind the plate had nail polish on these two fingers.
No, yeah. No, catchers do it so the pitchers can read the signal. He's right.
So he plays what? Baseball? Softball? Is that enough?
Yeah, it's a start. Still have some contacts here. I'll make a few calls.
What are you going to do?
I'm thinking maybe I'll close my eyes.
I think that's a good idea.
Later, they meet in Molly's garage.
This is where he measured the cord, and here's where he cut it.
Yeah.
How did he know where to cut it?
Well, like I said, he made that jump twice a year. He knew exactly how long to make it. I even was here when he cut it.
Could he have been distracted?
He measured it twice. We even joked about it.
Measure twice, cut once.
A soft smile crosses Molly's face. Monk spots a row of trophies on a windowsill.
Triathlon.
Yeah, he was state champion 5 years in a row.
Does anybody touch these?
Never. Those are his babies.
2018, 2016, they're out of order.
What? No, that's not possible.
Molly and Natalie join Monk by the window.
This window was painted shut at some point, but the seal is broken. There's paint chips. Somebody was here. In the garage, they climbed through.
Oh, my God.
Is anything missing?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Why would they do that? Why would they break in and not take anything?
I have no idea.
I need a drink.
You read my mind.
Okay.
Meet you inside. I want to take a look out back.
Behind the garage, Monk holds his hands out in front of him, waving them vaguely as he scans the area outside the window. He drops his hands to his side and shakes his head. He turns toward the window and looks at the ground, then crouches. Trudy appears.
I don't see any footprints.
That wouldn't be. It rained on Tuesday.
She steps toward Monk with her eyes on the ground.
Sprinkler's cracked.
Somebody stepped on it.
Maybe.
He uses a pen to pick up the cracked sprinkler head, then examines a tree next to the window with broken branches. Monk turns to Trudy.
What are you smiling about?
Molly was right. It was murder.
Not necessarily. Could be unrelated. Some neighborhood kids fooling around.
And they didn't take anything? And they put everything back and then they closed the window behind them? Molly was right.
But how? Griffin measured the cord himself.
You'll figure it out. It might take you a while, but I hope it does. I hope it takes you 10 years. I want you busy. I want you distracted. So you don't think about, you know.
Disher rounds the corner.
Monk! Hey, found him, the guy from the bridge. You okay?
He follows Monk's gaze.
There were 7 softball games played last weekend. Pulled photos from all the teams. This guy. Molly just ID'd him. She's 100%. His name's Lucas Kubrick. Guess where it works.
I don't know.
Monk studies the image, then locks eyes with Disher.
Do you really want me to guess?
No, my deputies love it when I make them guess.
No, they don't. They hate it. Randy, where does he work?
He's a delivery driver. Eden Express. Guy works for Rick Eden.
Monk's brow furrows. Various luxury cars sit in the driveway of a sprawling mansion protected by an elaborate gate with security. In a shiny Volkswagen, Disher drives Natalie and Monk up to a security guard with a goatee.
Hey, Randy Disher, we have an appointment with Rick Eden.
Yes, sir. I'll follow the signs around back. You know, there was a singer, Randy Disher, the Randy Disher Project.
Yeah, that's me. That was him. I am him.
Holy God. I don't believe it. This is crazy. I'm like your biggest fan. I listen to you all the time. Listen.
I don't need a fan to tell me wrong from right.
Hey, Jerome. It's Randy Disher.
Hey.
Oh.
Hey.
Oh, my God. What are you doing here? No one's going to believe this. Can we get a photo?
Yeah, sure. I'm just going to get a photo.
Disher gets out of the car.
Randy Disher Project on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Randy Disher Project.
Here, get another one.
What are the odds of this happening?
0. The odds are 0.
Get one more.
Hey!
What you're seeing is impossible.
You know who you should meet? Our chief of security. He's like obsessed with you.
All right.
Oh my God. Here he comes.
The decorative gates open and a man exits.
I don't need a badge to tell me wrong from right.
Captain!
I'm tired of sucking up and working for the man.
Oh, that was so mean.
I heard you were coming. I couldn't resist. Howdy, Sheriff. Oh, hey, good job, boys.
Can I turn this off now? Please.
Yeah. Natalie Teeger.
Natalie Albright.
Natalie, whatever your name is, you look amazing.
Wipe.
Yeah, I'll take one of those.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Natalie hands Disher and Stottlemyre disinfectant wipes.
Look at us. It's a whole new world, right?
Not to me. But you're working here.
Yeah, since February, I'm the chief of security.
Look at this place. is that a guest house?
Yeah, that's guest house number 5. TK and I live in guest house number 2.
Oh, how is she?
She's doing great. And I'll tell you why she's doing great. She's living in guest house number 2. I should have jumped ship 20 years ago. I'm making twice the salary, plus my pension, plus the perks are amazing. It's like I won the lottery.
That's awesome. I just wish we were here for a different reason.
Yeah, I heard about the kid. That was brutal. The day before her wedding. What's she doing?
You know, not great. One day at a time.
Yeah, Rick is heartbroken about it.
Is he really?
Yes, he is. Don't believe everything you read about the guy. He's good people. You'll see.
In a lavish living room.
I am thrilled that you are able to join me for a celebration today. I've just sealed the sweetest of deals.
Rick just bought the Atlantic.
Whoa!
Not the ocean, Randy. It's a magazine.
Yeah. Mr. Monk, I assume you take it neat?
I'll pass.
Now, I cannot tell you what an honor it is to have the great Adrian Monk in my house. You know, when I first moved here in 2002, you were already a legend. For a while there, it seemed that you were solving a major case every week.
Thank you. I couldn't have done it alone. Well, maybe I could have, but it would have taken a lot longer.
Well, I'll leave you kids to it. I'm going for a swim. In the ocean, not the magazine.
I like her.
Hmm. As do I.
Hey, why don't we sit? Rick's a little pressed for time. For the record, Rick is seeing you as a courtesy to me. He barely knew Griffin Briggs.
I only met him once at the launch site. Spent about 20 minutes with him, maybe less.
His fiancée, Molly Evans, said that you threatened him.
No, I don't threaten people. She must have been distraught, which is hardly surprising. You know, people deal with grief in different ways, don't they? So. Ah, the Napoleon pastries. I have these flown in from the Du Majeur in Paris. Help yourself. I'm on the billion-dollar diet. First you make $1 billion, then it doesn't matter how you look.
Billion-dollar diet.
This is a picture of Lucas Kubrick. He was on the bridge the day Griffin Briggs died.
Huh?
He hands Rick the photo.
Do you know him?
Should I know him?
He works for you.
Mr. Monk, my company employs 1.2 million people. It's a larger workforce than the U.S. Postal Service. I can hardly be expected to recognize every delivery man on the payroll. So, you know, I'm sorry, but I really think that you're wasting your time here. In fact, worse than that, you're certainly wasting my time. Why would I be bothered about a story on a wonky little website that, what, 30 people read?
Well, it wasn't just another story. When Mr. Truesmith drowned, you inherited his half of the company. It's a pretty strong motive.
According to Griffin, the charter boat crew was paid off with money from an offshore bank.
Hearsay, stories, blind speculation. People write things about me every day. It's a national pastime. I understand there was a story about me in the Times just this morning.
Yes, I read it.
Oh, and do you think they did me justice?
Do you deserve justice?
Excuse me, Monk. Can I talk to you for a second?
Stottlemyre shoves Monk into an office.
What the hell are you doing? We were told that this was not a formal interview, that you were just going through the motions to reassure Molly.
That's what it was at first.
I can't believe we're even having this conversation, Monk. The man was bungee jumping. He voluntarily jumped off of a bridge.
I know.
You just accused Rick Eden of orchestrating his murder. Why? Because he couldn't recognize one of his delivery drivers?
How did he know Lucas Kubrick was a delivery driver? I didn't tell him.
Well, it's a pretty safe bet. Most of his employees are.
Actually, it's less than 30%.
Okay, well, the man misspoke. Slip of the tongue.
Plus, there's the motive. Then there's his choice of reading material.
A magazine with Griffin on the cover.
The guy was doing some research. He was curious. Doesn't mean anything.
Monk studies a huge painting.
Death of Socrates. Is that the original?
I'm sure it is. Okay, Monk, how about this? We call the new chief of detectives, Captain Rudner. She's good, almost as good as I was. We run this whole thing by her and see what she says, okay? Monk?
What do you think hemlock tastes like?
The team meets with Captain Rudner at the station.
Now, I have a policy. When Leland Stottlemyre asks for help, I drop whatever the hell I'm doing and I make it happen.
I appreciate that.
Good, now prove it. Next time we're at Dino's, try reaching for a damn check. Share some of that private sector booty.
Will do. Yes, ma'am.
And when Leland says he's bringing his friend, Adrian Monk, we roll out the red carpet. I have your visitor pass.
She hands passes to Stottlemyre, Natalie, and Monk.
This one is yours. It's a permanent pass. That's because we want you back here, Adrian, consulting for us. It's where you belong. It's not just me. These folks want you back, too.
Files.
This is my freezer. 22 open homicides. 22 victims who need your help.
I wish I could. Here's the thing. I have plans.
Again with the plans? He never goes anywhere.
Well, keep the pass. Just in case.
Captain? Whenever you're ready.
Footage of Griffin appears.
We've got the Vinton Creek Bridge the day of. We tracked down 14 witnesses. 8 of them were recording, so we pretty much have the whole scene.
There's Molly.
As you can see, Griffin arrives at 2:12. He's already wearing the harness, and he's got the bungee cord with him. Keeps it with him the whole time. No one else touches it.
That's our guy. That's Kubrick.
I've been watching this all morning. Kubrick and Griffin don't interact at all. They don't talk.
They're never within 4 feet of each other.
I'd still like to talk to him.
Unfortunately, that door has been closed. He lawyered up this morning.
What does that tell you?
Tells me he doesn't like talking to cops.
Which isn't surprising considering his pedigree. Lucas J. Kubrick, 3 convictions. Aggravated assault twice. Assault with a deadly. He did a 2-year jolt in Salinas.
Which explains why Rick Eden hired him. He was looking for an employee with a criminal record.
Hired him for what? You saw the tape. He didn't do anything. People, it is a fact of life. Accidents happen.
It wasn't an accident.
Disher rolls in a cart draped in a sheet.
I've been working on a little theory myself.
He removes the sheet, revealing a Lego model of the bridge.
Are those Legos?
Until yesterday, it was four Millennium Falcons. Now, it is the Vinton Creek Bridge. This is Griffin. Here's the bungee cord. Now, Griffin is jumping off the bridge.
The Lego man dangles.
He was planning to stop right there, right? But we know that Griffin measured the cord himself, so it wasn't the cord. So, what's the only other possible explanation? Someone lowered the bridge.
Oh, no.
Yeah, all he had to do was replace these 4 pillars with hydraulic gears. Here's what happened. Griffin Briggs was about to jump. The killer, or killers, lower the bridge by 6 feet.
Disher presses a button, and the bridge lowers. Natalie brings a hand to her temple.
Then Griffin jumps. And splat! It's a perfect crime.
Where would they get the machinery?
Well, they have the technology. Billionaires lower bridges all the time.
Billionaires lower bridges all the time?
Why?
To go fishing. Billionaires love to fish. They lower the bridge so they can see the fish better.
Disher raises and lowers the bridge over and over. The rest of the team watches him, unconvinced. Natalie lifts her brows, and Monk holds his fist over his mouth as Disher continues to play with the bridge.
Makes you think.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Quite the opposite, actually.
Disher lowers the bridge again. Later, Stottlemyre chats with Monk in a hall.
I don't want to hear it. Don't say it.
He's the guy.
How can you still like Rick Eden for this? Monk. Monk, I love you like a brother. You know that. But you're not thinking straight. Look, it happens. We're not kids anymore. Things get foggy. Yesterday, I couldn't remember the name of my first girlfriend.
Maria Beacom.
That's right. How did you know that?
Your mother mentioned it.
My mother's been dead for 35 years.
37.
He's not the guy. He can't be the guy.
Why not?
Because I love my job. That's why not. I've worked my whole life for this. See this watch? It's a $20,000 watch. He gave it to me. I'm flying on private jets. I'm farting through silk.
Wait, you're what?
Never mind. Well, I'm late for work. I gotta go. He's not the guy.
Stottlemyre leaves, and Monk throws up his hands. In her living room, Molly prints a page of notes for Monk.
Okay, so this is it.
That's it?
Yep, those are all the notes that he left.
There's a smudge.
Where?
Can you ignore it?
Of course I can ignore it. I'm not psychotic.
Monk rubs his thumb across the smudge.
So this is a list of... This is a list. So we...
Molly covers the smudge.
Thank you. These must be the witnesses from Bermuda. Is that bartender? Deckhand?
Yeah, so Griffin couldn't get any of them to talk. You figured that they must have been paid off.
Kremlin? Was there a Russian connection?
Yeah, I couldn't find anything, but I'm gonna keep digging. I'm not giving up.
I know you're not.
Are you?
Never.
Monk picks up a suit draped across a couch.
Oh, that's his tux. I should really return that. It's probably costing me a fortune.
Monk takes a folded note out of the suit's breast pocket and reads it.
His wedding vows.
Really?
He hands them to her.
We wrote our own. Molly, there's a phrase that poker players use. They say, "I'm all in." And I want you to know that I'm all in on this marriage. I will nurture your dreams.
I will nurture your dreams and will help you reach them. I will take your hand when it's dark, and I will take your hand when it's not dark. I cannot wait to make bad choices together and take wrong turns with you and tell our friends the same boring stories over and over, forever and ever, until no one can stand us but each other. As the poet said, I love thee with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life. And if God chooses, I shall but love thee better after death.
He folds up the vows and hands them back to her.
I do. I do.
Molly hides her face in Monk's shoulder, and he pats her back.
It's okay. I have other jackets.
At the launch site, Rick stands in a niche built into the wall of a building. He peers around the corner as Kubrick marches toward him.
What's your problem?
You tell me.
Well, from my end, everything went down just like you said. Dead solid perfect.
Oh, right. Okay, well, tell me this, Mr. Dead Solid Perfect. What was Detective Adrian Monk doing in my house yesterday? Showing me a 10x8 photograph of you.
Here's all I know. I followed the plan, okay?
Right.
You want me to take care of this, Detective Monk? I'll do that for you, yeah, happily.
No, thank you. You've been quite enough help already. I'll figure out a way to deal with Adrian Monk.
In the mission control room, a woman watches a monitor that shows security footage of Kubrick and Rick. Stottlemyre enters with his hands in his pockets and a toothpick in his mouth. He looks at the woman's monitor.
Hey, Brian, camera seat, bump it up here.
Yes, sir.
The footage of Kubrick and Rick appears on the big screen.
Isn't that the boss?
Rick and Kubrick split up.
Yep.
In Dr. Bell's office, Monk gazes out the window.
So, what happened Monday?
I know, I'm sorry.
You know, that was the first appointment you've ever missed.
I got mixed up. Forgot what day it was.
You forgot what day it was, huh? You know, I have another patient. His name is Adrian Monk. You look a lot like him. He didn't call. I called Molly. She said you were investigating Griffin's death. So how does that feel? To be working again?
It's like riding a bicycle.
Good. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I mean, it's terrifying.
Molly thinks that Rick Eden, the billionaire, is somehow responsible for what happened. Is that possible?
It's possible. But it's not possible.
I don't understand.
Neither do I. Leland doesn't believe it. Maybe he's right. I'm completely lost here. Do I really suspect this man? Or am I just saying I do to make Molly happy? Or is it because it's important to Trudy?
You've been talking to Trudy?
No.
You just said it's important to Trudy.
No, I didn't.
Adrian, I'm sitting right here. I heard you say it.
We're out of time.
We're not out of time.
What I meant was, it would have been important to Trudy.
Is Trudy here? Is she with you now?
Monk gazes at Trudy, who sits on a couch on the other side of the room. Dr. Bell grabs a box of tissues from a coffee table and sets them down by Monk, who holds up his hand.
I'm okay.
It's not for you.
Dr. Bell?
I have something to tell you. I retired 2 months ago. You're the only patient I have. I love you, Adrian.
Monk slides the box towards himself and grabs a tissue as Dr. Bell weeps.
I love you too.
Monk cries into his tissue. Sliding the box closer, Dr. Bell grabs another tissue.
This can't be healthy.
I'm so worried about you, Adrian. You never lied to me before or missed an appointment. I don't think you appreciate how many people love you. Not just your friends. I mean, everyone. Everyone I know appreciates you and what you've accomplished.
What I've accomplished?
It's true. You're a remarkable man.
All right.
An important man.
Sure.
Well, how many homicides have you solved? 120?
140. What good has it done? At the end of the day, what difference have I made? Zero. Less than zero. Look at this. Look. Look at this city. Murder rate at a 30-year peak. Bystander slain. Oh, teen sought in double homicide. It's like I was never here.
Adrian?
Monk reads a headline. Local animal shelter threatened. Later, he and Natalie talk to an employee in a colorful vest at the shelter.
This is the third letter. This one came this morning. They're freaking everybody out. One girl quit.
This is the Canine Liberation Front. Your shelter is a death camp. We will save our innocent canine brothers by whatever means necessary. Soon, very soon, blood will flow.
You said you might know who's sending them?
I'm sure I do. When I saw that newspaper article, I recognized the address. I had seen it 2 days ago, written on a post-it note.
You remember an address you saw on a post-it note 2 days ago?
It's a gift and a curse.
I'm no longer so sure about the gift part, but it's not just the address. The handwriting matches. It is definitely Rick Eden.
The gazillionaire? Why would somebody like Rick Eden? Why would anybody pick on us? We're one of the best shelters in the city, and we never put our dogs down. Except when there's no other choice, like Watson here.
A black poodle.
He's practically blind. He can barely walk. He's afraid of everything. Cars, thunder, other dogs.
In a pen, Watson nudges a toy.
What's he doing?
Oh, he's cleaning his cage. That's all he does. All day long.
Mr. Monk, he's you. He even looks like you.
Thank you.
Oh. Hello, Bella. Hello. Isn't there anything you can do?
It's heartbreaking, right? He's already been here 6 months, and that's our limit.
Mr. Monk, you should adopt him. You could take care of each other.
I can't have a dog.
Why not?
Because I only have one bowl.
What does that mean? Just buy another bowl.
I'm not going to buy another bowl. I'd be a man with two bowls.
Huh?
Holding Watson in her arms, Natalie steps toward Monk.
Besides, he doesn't want to be rescued.
Of course he does.
No. No, he's ready to go. They'd be doing him a favor. He's alone. No one's gonna miss him. He's had enough.
Oh, he's saying, I love you.
No. He's saying, by all that's holy, let me go. Thank you for your time.
You mustn't give up hope.
Natalie sets Watson down, then steps out of the pen and walks past Monk. Moving toward the pen, Monk squats down to Watson's level.
Don't listen to her. You give up all the hope you want.
Monk joins Natalie outside.
Rick Eaton may be a lot of things, but he's no animal rights activist.
I agree.
For one thing, he wears that stupid leather jacket.
Plus, he's into bullfighting.
Bullfighting? What's the worst? So why is he threatening this nice little shelter? It doesn't make sense.
It will, eventually.
What does that mean?
Everything makes sense, eventually.
Fine, everything makes sense. Where'd I park my car?
Later, as Natalie drives, Monk mopes in the passenger seat. She shoots a glance at him.
Mr. Monk, I'm worried about you. You really should get a dog. Nobody needs a dog more than you.
In the side mirror, Monk eyes an empty delivery van. He cleans the mirror and sees Kubrick getting into the van.
Natalie, pull over!
What?
Right here!
She pulls into a parking spot, and Monk adjusts the rearview mirror.
That's Lucas Kubrick!
So this must be his route.
The animal shelter is on his route.
Apparently.
Oh, he is good. He's very good.
Who's good?
Rick Eden. This is brilliant. Eden paid Kubrick to kill Griffin Briggs, but now Eden has a problem. Lucas Kubrick is a loose end. He knows too much. Here's what happened. I mean, here's what's about to happen. Last week, Eden picked out a business on Kubrick's route.
Like the animal shelter.
It didn't matter. Any business would do. Then he sent them two or three anonymous letters. Crazy letters. Threatening letters. Then he sends a bomb. He probably mailed it yesterday. I'll bet he's tracking it right now. But here's the brilliant part. He's going to detonate it early before it gets delivered.
I get it. The bomb will kill Cooper, but everyone will assume...
It was meant for the animal shelter. Who'd ever think the delivery guy was the real target?
You were right. Everything does make sense.
We have to warn him. There's a bomb in that truck. Turn around.
Natalie backs up, then pulls forward and stops.
What are you doing?
It's called a three-point turn.
Natalie, oh my God.
I've never been good at these. I fucked the driving test 4 times.
Oh my God. Natalie, there's a bomb.
I know there's a bomb. Stop talking. You're not helping.
Oh my God.
We should leave a note.
Natalie, God.
There's nothing surer. The rich get rich and the poor get poorer.
That way. Turn it. Go forward. Natalie, forget it.
Monk gets out and runs.
Oh, God! Wait!
Kubrick pulls over to the curb by the animal shelter while Monk sprints through a park. In the van, Kubrick checks the folder, then grabs a package from the back of the van and gets out of the vehicle.
Lucas! Wait! That's a bomb! Lucas! That's a bomb!
Rick presses a button in a dark room. The word detonate flashes in red. The package explodes in Kubrick's arms. Monk backs up, then steps in animal poop.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Somebody help me! Please, somebody over here! Please, I'm down! Over here!
Oh my God! Mr. Monk, are you okay? Where are you hurt?
It's my foot!
What? Which foot? I can't see anything! Where?
Natalie!
What?
Natalie, amputate!
Oh, God!
Please! No choice. Just cut it off!
Oh, no.
Cut it off, please!
She spots the poop on his shoe, then shoves him.
No choice!
Oh,
cut it off!
God.
Where are you going? Help me, please, help me! Hey, I'm over here! Where are you going? Hey, somebody! Please!
At the scene, a medic covers Kubrick's body with a sheet, while others roll over a stretcher. Monk watches the scene from the park, barefoot and sipping coffee. Stottlemyre approaches him.
Hey, Monk. You okay? Where's Natalie?
She's over there, helping the other victims.
Where are your shoes?
I buried them.
Of course you did. Well, no surprise. You were right about Rick Eden. He is definitely the guy. He met with Kubrick this morning at the launch site. I clocked it myself. Damn it, I really did like that job.
Did you tell them you're quitting?
No, not yet. I figured I'd hang out long enough to help you nail the son of a bitch. That's what we do, right?
It's what we do.
Okay, what you need is his laptop. It's where all the digital bodies are buried. I've seen it. He keeps it in a desk in the Kremlin.
The Kremlin?
Yeah, that's what he calls his beach house in Monterey.
Griffin mentioned the Kremlin in his notes.
If you're gonna get it, it's gonna have to be tomorrow. His wife is throwing him a launch party over there. Just sneak in, go upstairs, grab the laptop, nobody will notice.
Wait. Why me? This sounds like a job for... not me.
Sorry, partner. I gotta be on site at Mission Control until the launch. You're on your own.
I'm not invited.
Don't worry about that. I'll get you in. You know, I don't think I've ever seen your feet before.
I have. Three times.
An opulent mansion stands near the shore, surrounded by a carefully manicured lawn. Well-dressed partygoers mingle around a fountain. Rick's wife, Gail, wears a knee-length magenta dress as she sings on a curving stone staircase.
Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Gail holds her hand out to Rick.
Hold my hand. In other words.
Near a bar, a frustrated crowd stands waiting. A pile of small drink umbrellas fills a garbage can. Monk stands behind the bar in a hat and fake mustache. He opens and closes an umbrella over and over until it breaks. He tosses it in the trash.
I love you.
Gail hugs Rick. Monk carefully slices a lime, then looks at a recipe.
How much longer is this gonna take?
Just a gin and tonic, Geraldo.
He measures limes.
That's close enough.
He throws them out.
It doesn't have to be perfect.
12, 13, 14.
What are you doing? 21,
22, 23,
22.
This is ridiculous. There's a smell funny to you.
He throws cherries in the trash, then takes the lid of a cocktail shaker off and looks inside. He puts the lid back on and shakes it some more.
Good evening, pool bar.
Monk, did you find the laptop?
I haven't had a chance. I've been really short-staffed.
Monk, what are you doing? You gotta get upstairs.
These poor people have been waiting.
You just tell them you're taking a little break. Just do it.
Okay. So, I'm gonna take a little break.
Oh, no, you're not.
We've been waiting.
We've all been waiting a long time.
Okay, fine. Right, who's next?
Ladies and gentlemen, if I may, Rick, the team was a little worried about you being up there by yourself. We all know how this man hates to be alone. So, we arranged for a co-pilot to keep you company.
The man grabs an inflatable female astronaut.
What am I to do with her? Thank you.
Yeah, I think I may be up there a little longer than I planned.
No.
Thank you.
Gail brings it upstairs.
You are going to need to find your own astronaut.
She throws it into the air and salutes. At the bar.
Is anyone making drinks?
Please.
Rick. Rick shakes his head and purses his lips. Monk slowly sets down his supplies, and Rick removes Monk's hat. Inside the mansion, Monk waits in a private office, sitting at a desk that has Rick's laptop resting on it. Rick walks through the door and nods to an employee.
Thank you, Robert.
Rick heads toward Monk.
Mr. Monk, aren't you a bit old to be doing this kind of thing? You know, snooping around, sneaking into parties, dressing up as a bartender? Oh, please. Shouldn't you be retired by now? No, actually, let me rephrase that. It is important to me that you are retired.
I'm sure it is.
You're familiar with OFCs, aren't you? I've taken the liberty of setting up an offshore account for you. You know, my first divorce cost me $200 million. Now, that was back in the day when 200 mil was considered to be quite the chunk of cash. I'm going to offer you significantly more than that. If I press this key here, you will be worth $1 billion. You'll be the 12th richest man in California.
You think money can buy anything?
I do. And here's why. Because it can.
And what would I do with $1 billion?
Anything. Everything. I might suggest, for example, rejuvenation therapy. They are doing miraculous things these days with cryogenics and blood transfusions. You could live forever.
Live forever? You really are a monster.
Before you answer, just consider this. Last week, I met with your old pal, Griffin Briggs, to offer him a job that I knew he coveted. And he turned me down. So I killed him.
You're admitting it?
Why should I deny it? You and I both know it to be true, so...
How?
How did he do it? Huh? Obviously, I'm not going to tell you that, sport. It'll take all the fun out of it, wouldn't it? Frankly, I could do without you running around looking under rocks, asking awkward questions, hence the offer.
Rick turns his laptop toward Monk.
Going once.
Rick starts to close the laptop.
Going twice. Boom, boom, boom.
Okay, you win. I'll take it.
He stares at Monk suspiciously.
Sorry, sport. Don't believe you. Oh.
Rick moves over to a balcony, watching fireworks burst in the sky.
We are missing one hell of a party.
Rick turns around. He rushes back inside to find Monk and the laptop gone. Outside, people sip drinks and film the fireworks. Monk jogs downstairs on the phone.
Leland, I have the laptop.
Where are you?
I don't know.
Monk hurries to a door, but it doesn't budge. He stops in front of a scuba gear storage area, then rushes through a spa room. Monk tugs on a door leading outside. Meanwhile, Rick stomps down the dark staircase, searching for Monk. He pauses by his scuba gear and grabs a spear gun. Rick moves through the spa room and steps outside through the door Monk opened, spear gun at the ready. Vibrant fireworks burst in the night sky. Racing across the lawn, Monk clutches the laptop. Meanwhile, Rick scans his yard for Monk. Monk runs through the gate of a tennis court. He pauses by a set of switches where one is flipped down, while the rest are up. Monk goes to get a closer look. He flips the switch up, and the fluorescent court lights flash on. He switches the lights off, then looks back at the switch box. He hesitantly reaches for the switch and turns the lights back on. In the distance, Rick watches the tennis court lights switch on and off. He slowly creeps toward the tennis court. Monk paces back and forth, then switches the lights back on and rushes off of the court and away from the mansion. Monk darts beneath string lights hanging in the trees. The yard drops off, and Monk pulls up short, peering down a steep cliff to the waves crashing far below.
Adrian!
Monk spins around to see Rick inching toward him, aiming the spear gun. Rick holds out his hand.
Give me your phone.
Monk fishes his phone out of his pocket and hands it to Rick.
Good.
Rick chucks it over the cliff's edge.
The laptop. Put it down. Put it down.
Monk slowly sets the laptop onto the ground, then holds his hands up.
I don't suppose I could convince you to jump, could I?
Not tonight. Not yet.
No. You really should have taken the money.
Monk charges at Rick, taking hold of the spear gun. Rick kicks Monk, then strikes him with the butt of the gun, knocking him over the edge of the cliff. He watches Monk plummet toward the ocean. Rick breaks into a sly grin. Waves crash onto the jagged rocks below. In daylight, birds fly over a harbor. Police patrol boats float near a dock. Molly trudges along the dock, then quickly answers her phone.
Hey!
Any news?
No, nothing yet. They said this time of year that the currents can be unpredictable. He could be anywhere.
Oh my God. Poor Mr. Monk.
Wait, Natalie. Wait. I think they're coming back, yeah. And there's somebody with them. Yeah, there's somebody with them.
Is it him?
Yes. Okay, it's him. They have him. They have both of them.
Did you say both of them?
Yeah, he's with a woman.
Monk sits in the back of the boat, shivering and hugging the inflatable astronaut woman. Later, he sits on a bench with Molly, a blanket wrapped around his shoulders.
She saved my life.
I know she did.
She's a phenomenal swimmer.
I'm sure she is.
I told her things and I've never told anyone.
Adrian, I've made a decision. I want you to quit the case.
Quit the case?
I already lost Griffin. If anything happened to
Molly,
you...
Molly, he's the guy. Rick Eden, he confessed last night. He told me. He did it.
He actually said that. Did he say how?
He shakes his head.
So you can't prove anything. You know what? I don't care. Let him win. He wins. It was a perfect murder. I just want to move on.
You could live with that? No. You couldn't.
I'll learn to live with it. I just got a job offer in New York. I know, it's terrible timing. Or maybe it's not so terrible, I don't know.
Come with me.
To New York? Mm. With you? Mm. I can't.
Why not?
Because I love you.
She adjusts his blanket.
Broken window.
In a montage, Monk wanders down a sidewalk at night, then rests on a bench, staring off with a trembling jaw. String lights wrapped around trees twinkle behind Monk as he walks. He stands near the harbor with his head down. At his desk, Monk writes letters for each of his friends. In neat rows, envelopes bear the names of Dr. Bell, Molly, Disher, Julie, Sharona, and more. In perfect cursive, he writes, "Dear Harold, almost all is forgiven. Your friend, Adrian Monk." He adds quotation marks around the word friend. He vacuums his living room, then adjusts a plant and a lamp on a side table.
Chase love away.
He fluffs the pillows on his couch and rotates a lampshade before sliding his coffee table into a straight line.
Flowing.
He looks around the room with glossy eyes and nods.
I think it's going to rain today. Right before me.
At his dining table, Monk lines his pills up in perfect rows. Trudy sits beside him, running her hand down his arm.
Show them the way.
Is that it?
Not quite. I have one more stop.
Monk descends a flight of stairs into a funeral home showroom. He checks out a wooden casket with a wreath of flowers on top, then looks at the others. Two middle-aged identical twins stand behind a counter. Monk inspects an open casket.
If you have any questions, that's our most popular model. It's also available in a cream velvet interior for the man who had everything. May we ask, when is the funeral?
Oh, he hasn't actually passed yet.
Ah.
But it's imminent.
Ah, imminent. Well, we're very sorry. May we ask, how old a gentleman is he?
About my age.
Oh, that's too young.
No, it's about right.
But you loved him. That's obvious.
No, not really.
Monk winces at a price tag.
If budget is a concern, we also offer cremation.
Oh, cremation. I don't think so. We're not big fans of ashes. No.
This is pure titanium alloy. 100% airtight.
Yes, he'd like that. Could I pay in installments?
That's not an option we can offer. You see, this product is buried. It's under the ground, which makes it difficult, if not impossible, to repossess. This is one of our favorite models. We have two of them.
Reserved for ourselves.
Identical caskets. For identical twins.
Not quite identical. Your head is smaller by a quarter of an inch.
The twins exchange looks, then turn to Monk in disbelief. Later, the two of them wrap measuring tapes around their heads.
22.5.
22.75. He's right. Nobody's ever mentioned this before.
I'm sure they noticed. They were just being polite.
Well, this explains a lot. I mean, whenever you borrow my sweaters, they get all stretched out. I'll tell you what it explains. It explains why you've never beaten me at chess. Well, you're a freak. You're a pea brain. Oh, with the size of your head, I'm amazed you can stand upright. Your birth was so easy because my head paved the way. Oh, I can't even believe that I even look in your eyes and then I can see the whole thing in one frame.
Monk lines up the measuring tapes and grins.
What are you smiling about?
At the launch site, Rick waves to fans.
This is truly an historic moment here at the Eden Space Center in Harding, California, where people have been gathering all morning. In less than 4 minutes, Richard J. Eden will become the first private citizen in history to orbit the planet.
Wearing his astronaut suit, Rick high-fives fans and kisses his wife. They pull apart, and Rick heads toward the rocket, beaming. Inside the rocket, Rick buckles himself in, then closes the door. He swivels around to face a monitor showing charts and data.
Genesis, you're looking good.
Stand by for final go, no go.
Roger that. Switching from AC to main B.
Monk peeks through the rocket's window.
Genesis, we're activating the ground launch sequencer. Verify your power supply.
Pressure is holding. Transferring to internal power.
The rocket's thrusters turn on.
Genesis, we are T-minus 3 minutes. Activating flight recorders.
Roger that. Activating primary burn off.
Monk sprays the window with cleaner, then squeegees it. Rick turns to the window with a confused look.
As you can see, the countdown clock has stopped. We're hearing reports of police activity in and around the control room.
Rick, honey, we have a problem. There are some police officers here. They have a warrant for your arrest.
Hey, find Leland Stuttlemyre.
He can take care of that.
Leland is the one with the warrant.
Here, boss. This is a bad time. I want to introduce you to Captain Lisa Rudner, Homicide Division.
Mr. Eden, we have a warrant for your arrest.
For 2 counts felony murder, special circumstances.
Oh, and by the way, I'm quitting. And I'm keeping the watch.
Monk opens the rocket's door and looks inside.
Monk. No, this is impossible. You're
dead. Not quite yet. You know, first things first.
We're joined now by Natalie Teager Albright and Sheriff Randy Disher from Summit, New Jersey. Now, you two were seen arriving on the launch tower with a mysterious man. Can you identify him?
Yes, his name is Adrian Monk. He's my former boss.
And from here, it looks like he was washing the windows of the capsule with a squeegee?
He's probably not thinking straight. He's afraid of heights. It's his second biggest fear after germs.
Actually, it goes germs, needles, birds, then heights.
No. It's germs, heights, snakes, needles, Neil Diamond, birds, puppets, soccer riots,
I think it's
milk,
puppets,
baby shoes.
It's before birds.
Puppets is... Wait, so puppets, birds...
Mothballs.
Mothballs.
Looks like he's conversing with Rick Eden. Do you know what they might be saying?
Well, by now, he's probably doing the here's what happened.
The what?
I just couldn't figure it. How could that cord be 6 feet too long? Griffin measured it himself. He cut it himself. Could you scooch over, please?
This right.
This is just a little close in here. I don't do well in confined spaces.
All right, scooch. Right.
Just leave that alone. It's a very... Don't touch that. All right. Move this over. Ow. God. Get a little air. Does it really have to be that big? Yes, it does. There's a lot of information on there. Okay. Wait a moment.
But then, this morning, I met two funeral directors.
Funeral directors?
They were identical twins, except for their hat size. Doesn't matter. It was never about the bungee cord. You never touched the bungee cord. It was about this.
Monk holds up a tape measure.
His tape measure? This was the murder weapon. Here's what happened. You had done your research. You knew Griffin always measured his own bungee cords. You had Kubrick make another tape measure. It was identical to the one Griffin used. There was only one difference. Every inch was slightly longer, just a fraction of a millimeter, not enough for anyone to notice. After that, it was easy. Kubrick broke into the garage and switched tape measures. Griffin thought he was measuring 304 feet, but in fact, It was 6 feet longer.
In a flashback, Griffin leaps off of the bridge.
He never had a chance.
He never had a chance. He never had a chance.
Now Stottlemyer and Rudner escort Rick through the crowd.
Mr. Eden, over here! You can't make a statement.
Rick, what about the mission?
Well, this mission has been scrubbed.
I'd say the next 40 years of your life have been scrubbed.
Sport?
Rick faces Monk.
$1 billion. What were you thinking?
I was thinking about my wife. Molly was her baby. You broke her baby's heart.
Rudner grabs Rick and leads him to the police car, pushing him into the back seat.
I gotta say it. I've really missed this.
Yeah, me too.
I guess I'm retired again.
Oh, there's an opening in New Jersey. I'm looking for a deputy.
In New Jersey.
The crew walks off side by side. At the park, Monk sits at the picnic table, staring into the distance. In front of him lies a cloth with the rows of pills. Monk moves 2 pills forward, then removes the cap of a water bottle. He brings the pills to his lips. Then Trudy stops him.
Wait. Adrian.
I've waited long enough.
Adrian, I'm not alone.
In all white, Griffin walks over to the table.
Hello, Adrian.
Griffin.
I just wanted to say thank you.
For
closure. Justice. When I couldn't speak for myself, you spoke for me.
Monk does a double take as a crowd of people in all white circle around the picnic table.
They're murder victims of cases you solved.
Monk stares at them in awe.
They heard that you were in trouble and they wanted to help.
Mr. Monk, we wanted to thank you for never giving up.
God bless you, Mr. Monk. You fought for us.
We're so grateful.
I'm at peace, thanks to you.
My family can move on, thanks to you.
You were all we had.
You never quit.
Trudy rubs Monk's back. He looks to a woman with braids.
I don't remember you.
I'm still in the freezer. I haven't been solved yet. I'm waiting for you, Mr. Monk.
Monk lowers his gaze and nods, then turns to his wife.
Adrian! Adrian!
As Molly approaches, Monk hides his pills.
There you are. You okay?
I'm fine. I'm fine. I just had to clear my head. I was about to head back.
Okay, well, my car's right up here.
I thought I'd walk. Beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day.
Not a perfect day, but good enough.
The police pass.
I found this in your other jacket, and I thought maybe you could swing by the precinct, see if the new captain might need any help.
I might do that. I might do that.
Molly pins the pass onto his suit, then gives him a peck on the cheek.
Thank you. Don't wipe that off for a while.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
She watches as he strolls off, then looks down at the tattooed ring on her finger. She squeezes her hand into a fist, then breathes in with a smile. Trudy and Griffin walk behind Monk, along with a crowd of hundreds of people in all white. Trudy eyes Monk with a grin. He looks ahead, then presses his fist to his mouth and breaks into a smile. The title appears over black, Mr. Monk's Last Case.
It's jungle out there.
Monk steps into his kitchen with a grocery bag and sets the bag on the spotless counter. He pauses as he spots a note under a dog bowl.
Take care of each other. Love, Natalie.
Watson trots through the living room and stares up at Monk. He sets the note down, barely holding back a grin. Watson gazes up at him. If you or someone you know needs help, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-TALK, or dial 988. It's free, confidential, and available 24/7. Credits roll. Logos, Mandeville Films, Andy Breckman Productions, UCP.